You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and I am one of your co-hosts on this fabulous show. But with me, as he is every week, is Tristan Riddell. And how are you today, Tristan?
I'm doing quite well. In fact, I'm doing fantastic because today is a special day for us.
Indeed it is, because this is the day, the exact day, November 1st, 2012, when episode 1 of TTJ debuted.
That's right, and that's the day that we're recording this, even though that you guys are in the future as you're listening to it. But just know that you can bring out the party hats and bring out the noisemakers. 2 years you've been listening to TTJ. Now, does it feel like 2 years, Char?
You know what? It really doesn't. It's gone by so incredibly fast. I can't believe we've done 96 episodes of this show, 2 years, going strong, no idea of how further this is going on to the future, but as long as it's like this, I am on board. We could be 85 and doing this. I totally see it.
What's really great is that 2 years in doing this, there's 52 weeks in a year, so that's 104 weeks in 2 years, and we're only 4 episodes away from our 100th episode. And so that means we've only missed a handful of episodes from giving you every single show every single week in 2 years.
Yeah, I'd say we have a pretty decent track record. On a very rare occasion, one of us has been quarantined in sick bay. I believe we took a week off when Lori and I went to Star Trek Las Vegas, but other than that...
And we take off Christmas, so that's two... Like,
yes,
that's,
we
that's
do.
That's two episodes right there for 2 years.
Yes, although we will do a Christmas message. As we have in the past. We'll just keep doing that. Yeah, we'll come up with something special. But anyway, yeah, 2 years, I replicated a Jubalian fudge cake.
Nice.
And unlike Janeway's replicator, mine doesn't hate me, so I think it's going to be pretty tasty, and I can't wait to dig into that.
And I'll go ahead and put on the data waveform as the frosting on the Jubalian fudge cake.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I think we have a great episode in store for you this week because we're comparing what I think are two fantastic episodes. And we're going to be comparing Voyager's Author, which is a season 7 episode where the Doctor's rights as a hologram are questioned when he wants to publish one of his holo novels. We're comparing that to TNG season 2's The Measure of a Man, which is where Picard argues for Data's rights as a person. So, right off the bat, those descriptions sound awfully familiar, right? Yes?
Well, I think a lot of the times when we were thinking about doing this episode or doing this kind of segment, there will be times when an episode plot is just completely copied from Star Trek. It's like
right.
Enterprise is searching for ideas, and they're like, "Oh, well, Voyager did this one time, or TNG did this one time. Let's just recycle that." The beauty of these two episodes is that it's not recycling the plot; it's a natural extension of what happened in Measure of a Man. And that's the beauty of it. You could almost see this as The Measure of a Man Part 2. And that's what I really enjoy.
That's a really good point, because I feel like when I was watching both of these episodes last night in preparation for today, I kind of thought Measure of a Man started at a more basic place, going from, Data is a machine. And I think the audience at that time, and please, listeners, correct me if I am wrong, because I don't think I was watching TNG that regularly when Measure of a Man aired in 1988. I think the audience, by and large, kind of saw Data as a machine and was probably a little more on the side of Maddox, as in Data is it, not he, and that sort of a thing, without even realizing it. And then Measure of a Man took us from that point to, you know what? This guy has the right to choose. And then we take it a step further for an audience that's already savvy about this kind of debate with author-author.
I think you might not want to overstate it too terribly much, because I do agree with you. I do think that it was a very different perspective than it is today, because we mm-hmm. were just getting to know him. This is episode 9 of season 2, and so very we've early. Only known him for a season and a quarter, mm-hmm. and barely, not even a season and a half. And with that, like, even in the introduction of Data, even Riker was saying, like, oh, you know, so you're a lieutenant commander. That's an honorary rank, right? And Data's like, no, I went to Starfleet. You know, I did all this. I went through my training and everything like that. And so right off the bat, Gene Roddenberry and crew knew that this would be hard for the audience to swallow. And so, mm-hmm. but the thing is, in that first year, we got to see a lot happen with Data. And so I feel like audience warmed up to him pretty fast, but I think you're absolutely right by saying they probably didn't even think about, you know, android rights or simulated life rights or anything like that. Like, why would they? You know, like, it's uh-huh. completely, but by the time we get to author and Voyager, which is, like, we're talking about season 2 of TNG to season 7 of Voyager. That's a lot of time.
It is. That it passed. It's more than 10 years even.
And so by that time, the Star Trek audience is much more savvy, much more aware of Federation law and Federation rights mm-hmm. and these kind of classifications, because in TOS, they didn't really focus on that too terribly much. But in no. all of TNG's run and Deep Space Nine's run and Voyager's run, we talk about it a great deal.
We really do. Maybe Measure of a Man is one of those very first episodes where we do start to get the feel for Starfleet law. I mean, there's that whole subplot of Picard and, oh God, I'm going to screw up her name. Okay.
Laveau.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Anytime there's a French name anymore, I just think, oh, Geneviève Bujold.
I love her name, Philippa. I think that is such a beautiful name for a woman.
It is a very pretty name, yes. So you have that whole kind of thing where they're trying to give us a little bit of backstory, right? Because Picard and this lady, they have a past with the whole Stargazer mm-hmm. thing. And then she is a lawmaker. She is the one who ultimately has the final word in the hearing. And so maybe this is like the first really big start.
Well, not to discredit TOS, because they did deal with Federation law and they did deal with court martials and they dealt with the courtroom and the whole situation with Captain Pike. And
they did.
And so they did have courtroom drama and things like that. So I don't want to discredit TOS. But what I'm trying to say is that we had much more time and effort put into Federation law with the golden age of Trek in the 80s and 90s than we did in the 60s. That's just fact. That's just how it is.
Sure. Yeah. How many episodes were produced in the time between TNG and the end of Enterprise, let's say? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hundreds. So a lot more time to explore this sort of stuff. Yes.
I also love that, since you brought up Philippa, I love that moment between Philippa and Jean-Luc when she says, she's like, you know, you are such an ass, but one damn sexy man.
Yeah, they had this fantastic flirtation going where they really kind of hate each other a little bit, but at the same time, you know, I think after dinner and a couple of drinks, they would totally hit the sack. and then the next morning, see ya.
I don't know if I'd go that far. That's just me personally, because that's your fan fiction writer coming out of you.
She would totally do it. Now, Picard, much more reserved. I think he would probably hold off a little bit and have some restraint and say, okay, look, I'm not that kind of dude. Now, okay. If it were Riker she were after, boy.
Probably. But I think what I really enjoy about that situation is you have, because we've all had relationships in our past, doesn't even have to be right now because you and I are both married, but where we have these situations, these relationships where there is intimacy without sexuality. And I think those are very special relationships. And with this, it kind of borders on that, where they have that love-hate relationship and they have that attraction. But what makes it a little bit special is that it's not an automatic lust, but just something where you realize they have that connection.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot more to it than just lust.
Yeah. And that I've always liked. And I like that it was added to these moments were added to the episode, because this is a very heavy episode.
It really is. It's very intense. It's very emotional. And this subplot, actually, I would say, is just as intense as the whole Data plot, just because there is that much going on between these two characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, they definitely have a past, and they definitely have clashed, and they're clashing yet again.
And also, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first introduction of the poker game in TNG, isn't it?
It very well might be, yeah. Yeah, because we see Data playing poker with the gang.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, I mean, and again, folks, we never want to be wrong on TTJ, so write us in.
we try.
Yeah, like, let us know, like, contact us on Twitter or go to trek.fm/contact and let us know, because I'm pretty sure that this is the first iteration of poker, which is how we end the show as well. And
yes.
But yeah, but moving on to the guts of it, this is obviously not, I wouldn't say a parallel to what is going on or a parallel to the civil rights movement or anything like that, but it definitely touches on that and about how mm-hmm. we can often disregard the rights of others because they're not like us.
Right. If you want to really break it down, you want to go to the speech where, well, it's not a speech, it's the conversation where that Guinan has with Picard, where anybody that you could simplify and put into a box, essentially, as a disposable person, if you don't regard them for being actual people, you're going to condemn them to doing the dirty work, as she said.
You know, I love that moment in that, because that moment between Picard and Guinan is what makes Author Part 2.
Yes, exactly. That's really the big, strong parallel, is when you get to the core of both of these episodes, that ultimately is what they're both about. It's talking about the implications of these whole armies of Datas or holograms and their future. And do they, or like, what are the implications of this action, should it happen? And we do see it happen in Author at the very end.
And that's what I'm talking about. It's like what Guinan and Picard predicted of what was going to happen actually physically did happen, because
yeah.
they found disposable creatures, disposable people who could be subjugated to the whims of the people in charge. And they were talking about how, you know, like, yeah, I can imagine the advantages of having one Data on every single ship. Well, that's mm-hmm. what they did. They have one EMH on every single ship, and no one batted an eye, because
right.
they weren't people. It was just a hologram. And it wasn't until we explored the character of the doc to where we realized that he was a person. It's kind of like the excuse of a lot of people don't care about homosexual rights until mm-hmm. they know someone who is a homosexual, or they have a family member who is a homosexual. Then all of a sudden it matters to them. And that's what happened to the Voyager crew. They don't care. They didn't care about holographic rights. There was no such thing as holographic rights.
Yeah, look at season one.
Yeah, yeah. Just look at season one and you'll see it. And the thing is that we talked about this on the Ready Room a long time ago about holographic rights, with how Janeway and the crew treated Fairhaven, the people of Fairhaven. And mm-hmm. I was, and still am, very much on the side of they're just holograms.
But then think about the other thing going on in Author, where is it okay to put a whole bunch of holograms into the dilithium mine and say that that's okay?
And that's the like, I think when we get to that, or we can talk about that right now, I have opinions about that. And it may not jive with the rest of the Star Trek fandom.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the idea, though, right? Is to get us thinking about this and make us question it. Because I feel, at least this is how I felt last night when I watched Author. I thought, you know what? Yeah, all those holograms in the dilithium mine, that is injustice. They are aware enough to realize that their station in life is at the hands of other people. They have no real control over themselves. But they are given hope by Photons Be Free.
But here's the thing, is that we're not talking about an entire, you know, mine that's filled with the Doctor. We're not talking about a mine that's filled with people who are just like him. We're talking about EMHs who have not learned opera, have not had sexual relations, who have not learned about themselves, who have not tried to progress themselves and become more than what they are. They are holographic copies of the same thing. And so that's where I'm at, where I'm like, you know, we're moving in that direction. We're going to move in that direction. We are going to have robots and or holograms in the future take care of the hard labor and the dangerous situations. And so, and that was kind of my position with Fairhaven, is that these people aren't the doctor. These people aren't sentient. These people aren't intelligent. They are programmed holograms. And so how can we treat them like people if they aren't people, where the doctor is?
Yeah, I suppose that is the best distinction you can possibly make in this case, because they are not self-actualized like the doctor. But what if they do become self-actualized? Then what? That, I think, is the next step for part three.
Sometime in the future. There's a Voyager novel that deals with this, where all of the worker holograms just rise up and refuse to do their jobs.
They form a union and start protesting.
Almost literally, yeah.
Yeah, that's
pretty much what happens. It's crazy. And one of the major differences between these episodes and the reason why this is a great natural progression, and we didn't get as much of a victory at the end of Author-Author, because at the end of Author-Author, the judge does not determine the doc as a person, but he does grant him artistic rights, which I think was the right move at the time, because the major difference here is there's only one Data. There are billions of the doc.
Copies thereof, but like we said earlier, not nearly as thorough.
Not just in the minds. When I say billions, I'm talking about not just in the minds. I'm talking about people use holograms all over the Federation space, whether in holodecks or holosuites, or, you know, in their job or wherever. So when I say that, I don't mean just like billions of copies of the Doctor of EMH Mark One. I mean, whatever that judge decided, if he granted like the doc as a person, that could bring precedent to open it up for every single holographic being out there, whether they're sentient or not. But with Data, they only had to worry about one being.
More or less. I mean, Lore is going to be lurking in the background for a while, but yeah, this is focused on Data.
Oh, come on. You're going to argue with me about another Soong android that's out running and gallivanting across the universe?
No, I don't want to go there. No. Let's not say we did.
All right. One person, one being, relatively. He's a unique, but that was the whole thing, is that he was a unique person. He was a unique thing. Creature, and and that's the big difference between him and the doc.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely similarities. There's definitely some differences, and each episode kind of has the same idea and handles it just a tiny bit differently.
Yeah.
To sum up probably everything we've been saying for about the last 10 minutes,
but what do you think? What do you think would have happened if they had to have a Riker type situation on Author-Author? Because in Measure of the Man, for people who haven't seen the episode in a long time, the JAG office was very understaffed, and so Philippa was saying, okay, well, Picard, you have to do Data's defense, and then Riker, since you're the first officer, you have to be the prosecutor. Riker's like, no, he's my friend and comrade. I'm not going to do this. And she's like, well, then I'm just going to judge right now that he's not a person. And so you have to do it, and if I feel that you're not living up to your full expectations, then I'm going to stop the trial right away. And so Riker has to go into it full force.
Mm-hmm.
And prove that Data's not a person. What do you think would happen, and who would it be on Voyager if that same situation happened?
Oh, man, I'm so glad you brought this up, because that's the other little kink in the differences between these things. I mean, yeah, you have Riker basically, he's in pain as he makes his argument against Data, and he does do a fine job. He almost wins, right? So the feelings associated with that, I mean, just watching him go through it, you can just tell this is really getting underneath his skin. I feel so bad for Riker. Mm-hmm. Who would that be on Voyager to go against the Doctor? Now, that is interesting, because you have Janeway and Tuvok coming to his defense.
Yes. And I think because Tuvok has, I think, experience in that realm, they would make him the automatic defense.
I think you're right. Just because he is a security officer, he probably has the biggest credentials as far as criminal justice, well, not criminal justice, but as far as law and justice goes.
Right.
he would probably make just as compelling of an argument. And even though he's a Vulcan, I bet it would hurt him to have to do so.
Yes, I think so. But I think the person, in my opinion, that would be interesting to see as the prosecution would be B'Elanna.
Now, really? Okay, please explain this.
And I'm not picking B'Elanna just because I think she's fantastic. I'm picking B'Elanna because she's an engineer.
Oh, well, of course.
I think that's the reason why I'm picking B'Elanna, because she is the one who, like, besides Kim, who is very much in charge of maintaining his subroutines and making sure he's working right, and if there's any changes that need to be made, she's the one who does it. And so she can view him from a purely technical standpoint, while other people can view him as emotional. She knows the nitty-gritty and base of it.
Oh, yes, you are absolutely right. I can't believe I didn't think about this.
I'm not saying that B'Elanna sees him only this way. It's the same thing with Riker. Like, Riker didn't see him as a machine. He saw him as a friend, but he was able to look at it that way. With B'Elanna, she would be able to do that even more so.
Absolutely. Just because she is the go-to person to help him when there is a problem, make sure that he's performing at optimal efficiency, all of that wonderful stuff. Yeah, you're totally right. It would be B'Elanna.
That's what I think. I think if the JAG had to make a choice and they wanted to make a good one, I think it would be B'Elanna.
All right. So we got to kick Tuvok out of the room and bring in B'Elanna. I think
Tuvok, as I said before, I think Tuvok would be automatically towards his defense because
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I personally think. I think Tuvok would be the defense like he was, but then if they chose a prosecutor, it would be B'Elanna.
Okay. That's true. It's not a situation where they're shorthanded for the doctor's hearing.
That's
true. True.
Exactly. When I started to do my research for these episodes, and you said, like, hey, let's do Measure of Man and let's do Author-Author, I was like, okay, great. And then I started realizing, I was like, wait, no, Author-Author is the one where he makes photons be free. There's another episode where he has to fight for photons be free. In my mind, these are two separate episodes. Author-Author is two separate episodes where we see him create it and the whole problem with it, with the crew and everything like that. And then that's the end of the episode. And then we have another episode where it's like, oh my God, you know, Photons Be Free was released without his permission. We need to fight for it. Because Measure of a Man focuses almost solely, on the courtroom process, Voyager only focuses less than 10 minutes on the courtroom process.
Yes. Okay, again, I'm glad you brought this up. We don't actually get to the issue of holographic rights until 32 minutes into Author-Author. Whereas, like you said, with The Measure of a Man, that is the crux of the entire story. They spend the whole episode examining it. That's why I kind of feel like with Author-Author, we see the whole creation thing, and we see the various crew members go through the simulation. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is... I don't want to say it's a B-plot, because it's so interconnected.
Yeah.
I think it's a little funner, though, than watching Picard and Laveau spar, even. Just because the exaggeration of the simulation is so much fun, and the reaction is fantastic. But, yeah, we kind of, like, realize, I think they realized, okay, we're kind of doing a little something that we've done before, so we have to throw in some twists, we've got to make it a little different, and we're going to be a lot more concise about it.
Yeah, yes, and they were very concise.
You have to be when you have 12 minutes.
With Measure of a Man being so heavy, and it was also apparently a whole lot longer because we just got an extended episode with the Blu-ray release of The Measure of a Man.
True.
So they had to condense it already. And with it being so heavy and so long, I think Voyager saw that and was like, okay, well, we're going to do what Voyager does best, and we're going to add some humor to it and then lighten the load for the end. And like you said, like right off the bat, the crux of the episode, when we have the Badmiral Nakamura come on board...
So glad you called him a Badmiral.
That was just because of you. I didn't actually know about that until you said something about it. He was so dismissive right off the bat. He comes onto the bridge and like Picard's like, oh yeah, this is the bridge. And he's like, oh yeah, very, very nice bridge. Very nice bridge. Oh yeah, Maddox wants your android, so we're going to transfer him. And then and like, your android. Not Data, not Mr. Data, not Lieutenant Commander Data.
Again,
your android.
Showing the difference right there. And I don't know, watching this episode now, after we've had all of this evolution with special characters like this, you want to think, oh my God, how did something like this get approved by Starfleet so easily?
Yeah.
They didn't question it until the order had already been approved and almost happened. Oh my God! No. But of course, that's in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like you said, it's all in hindsight. We know Data. We've been with Data for decades now instead of just a year.
Yes.
And yeah, it's fantastic. And not only these episodes, both of these episodes were extremely well written.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you is, do you think one is better than the other?
Oh, Measure of Man, hands down.
Think so?
Oh, yeah.
Is it because it is more thorough in the examination, or do you just... Okay. Okay.
I think, for those of you at home, I shook my head. Yeah, I nodded yes.
Bad podcaster. Bad.
Bad podcasting. No, the reason why I say that, and I want to know your answer too, is... The reason why I say it is because it's almost... Even though these are companion episodes, these are very different episodes. Very different feeling, very different vibe. And The Measure of the Man is almost exclusively focused on drama and civil rights. And Author is focused on the humor and the struggle that the Doc feels within his own crew and then has rights as an afterthought, almost towards the end.
It almost does feel that way, doesn't it?
And so I feel like Author is a much more enjoyable episode if you want something lighthearted and fun. Mm-hmm. And Measure of a Man is much more dramatic and impactful. So even though Author is one of my favorite Voyager episodes, Measure of a Man deals with the material, I think, in a manner that is respectful to how deep it is.
Yeah, I can't argue against that. Absolutely. Impact, I think, is the big word for my decision as to which one wins out. If I'm not looking for something like really deep that's going to make me think and question everything, I'm not going to go to Measure of a Man because I want something like Author where I'm going to think, but yeah. I'm also going to really enjoy it and I'm just going to kind of sit back and relax. Whereas I feel like the Measure of a Man, you have to give it your full attention to really yes. absorb it.
Yes, you're very right.
So you have to give respect to the episode for that, for really making you have to sit down for a full 45 minutes and not do anything else. Because I don't know about you, but a lot of times when I have Star Trek on, I'll have it on in the background and I'll be doing other things because I've seen these episodes so many times. Mm. But with an episode like that, if I really want to thoroughly recapture it, I've got to sit down and I've got to stare at that screen for the full 45.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's the beauty of this episode, and that's the beauty of Measure
right.
of Man.
Right. For an early season 2 episode as well of TNG, they were still getting their legs on a little bit. Mm-hmm. And to have an episode like this come out at that point in TNG's airing definitely gave the series, I would say, as a whole, a lot of strength and a lot of credibility. Because this is true Trek here.
And one thing, in my opinion, that I think puts this episode over Author is the writing. And one of the best things about the and it was written by Melinda Snodgrass, who was a story editor for TNG, and this was one of the first scripts that she ever wrote for TNG. And
pretty amazing.
We get these fantastic speeches from Riker, from Picard,
yeah.
from Luvaux, and we don't really get that in Author. We have some we get some condensed stuff at the end, but they're really just statements, not so much speeches.
You know what? You know what's really missing from Author is a great Janeway speech, but she just doesn't really do that in the way Picard does.
Yeah.
So
we were very spoiled with Patrick Stewart's public speaking.
I'm glad you mentioned that because you know what? When I taught public speaking, I actually used a clip of The Measure of a Man to demonstrate, I would make the kids watch the clip and say, okay, what did he do right here?
Mm-hmm.
As an example of good public speaking.
That's fantastic because this is a great way to show good public speaking. And
oh, yeah.
that one segment from him, I devoted it to memory when I was a kid. And this could be some of the best writing in all of Star Trek. And it's that one moment.
Now tell me, Commander, what is Data? I don't understand.
What is he?
A machine.
Is he? Are you sure?
Yes.
You see, he's met 2 of your 3 criteria for sentience, so what if he meets the 3rd? Consciousness, in even the smallest degree. What is he then? I don't know. Do you?
Do you? Do you? Well, that's the question you have to answer. Your Honor, a courtroom is a crucible. In it, we burn away irrelevancies until we are left with a pure product, the truth, for all time. Now, sooner or later, this man, or others like him, will succeed in replicating Commander Data. Now, the decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius. It will reveal the kind of a people we are, what he is destined to be. It will reach far beyond this courtroom and this one android. It could significantly redefine the boundaries of personal liberty and freedom, expanding them for some, savagely curtailing them for others. Are you prepared to condemn him and all who come after him to servitude and slavery? Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits. Waiting.
Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits.
Yeah.
Waiting. Bam.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you?
Do you? Do you?
I love that part.
Like, I love that. And I love that he looks at Riker when he does it.
Yeah.
He includes Riker into it.
And when
Feel that. You feel that stab. You're just kind of like, ooh, but no, he's one of the good guys. But easy.
Oh, man. Yeah, my heart totally bled for Riker last night rewatching this. Oh, God. Poor dude.
Yeah.
I'm just so happy the way the episode ended, though, with Data and Riker going off.
That's the way it needed to end, because...
Totally.
Jonathan Frakes gave us some amazing acting in that episode, because we see him research, we see him investigate, and he, all of a sudden he finds something and he gets excited about it on his face. And then you see that realization of, oh, holy crap, I just got excited about condemning my friend.
Yeah, the watching his face fall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he realizes, oh, crap, I can do this.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we see that unity at the end. We see that, like, at the party, and then we see the unity at the end between Riker and Data. And we get that in Author-Author because the doc pretty much slaps them in the face with how he portrayed them on in his program.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, in spite of that, they still banded together to find a way to give him the rights that he needed.
Right. But not without a little backlash.
Because yeah.
Tommy reprogrammed it to show him, look at what you did. How do you like it?
Yes.
Which I think is totally appropriate because, let's face it, sometimes the doc's ego is a bit much.
He needs to get knocked down a few pegs here and there.
He needs a taste of his own medicine. It was very good for him.
Well, before we wrap up, Char, how do you feel about the mining colony and its future with all of these extra Mark Ones all over the place? Do you feel like they should be released? Do you feel like they should be deprogrammed to be less conscious so that it's just pure manual labor? Or do you feel like they should be given amnesty and become members of the Federation? What do you think should happen?
Oh, such a loaded question. And we touched on it earlier in the podcast where if they don't have a certain level of self-awareness, are they just machines or aren't they? I mean, that's kind of the question. Like, when you mentioned the holographic army rising up and protesting, does that mean that they've reached a level of awareness to where you have to acknowledge their rights? I don't know, man. It's such a big question that, honestly, I would probably have to write an episode myself and make some kind of commentary. That's why I think part three, whatever Trek is going to be in the future, is going to address this again. It's going to address it further. And who knows, maybe it will address the mining colony and places like it. But now I kind of want to know what you think. So what's up your sleeve?
With me, I think the premise is a little flawed. What is the advantage to having the Mark Ones go to a mining colony? Because here's the thing. Zimmerman designed a Mark One. Bam. He designed one Mark One. And then they copied and pasted him throughout Starfleet. Now, they didn't want the Mark Ones anymore because we saw the Mark Two. And then we heard Zimmerman talk about the Mark Three and the Mark Four and the Mark Five and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What is the advantage of making a medical professional program, putting them onto mining duty, when you could just create a simple and basic mining program? It's not like you're there and you're going, okay, we're not using the Mark Ones anymore. What are we going to do with all these Mark Ones? What you do is you erase them.
You deactivate them, right?
You deactivate them and you don't have to think about it anymore.
I mean, yeah.
It's not like I bought a Blu-ray player and I said, I was like, well, I have 300 DVDs. What am I going to do with them? I'll give them to someone or I'll sell them. No, it's like it's the difference where it's all digital and you have iTunes and it's like, well, I just upgraded all of my SD MOVs to high definition videos. What am I going to do with all these SD copies? You delete them. You don't need them anymore because you upgraded to HD. It's not like you have to physically hold them and like store them in your basement.
Right. And these holograms are not at the same level as the dock. And so really what you are doing at this point is freeing up hard drive space.
Yeah.
They're not really going to object that much. Maybe right as they get deactivated, like, just wait just a minute. And they're gone. But you're right. I mean, at that, there's a certain point where they're not going to fight for themselves and they're like any other hologram and they really don't care if they're deactivated or not. And you just simply replace them with something else. You're right. What are doctors doing in a mine?
This is why I don't feel for the situation at the end. I feel for the doctor.
Oh my God. You just opened my mind to a whole new realm here.
I feel for the doctor and his rights as an artist and his rights as a person. But with the mining facility, I don't care because of everything that we just said.
Oh my God. Okay, so why don't they have holograms who specialize in mining and they're more than happy to work in the dilithium mine?
Exactly, because you can program them to be happy to work in a dilithium mine.
Wow. Okay, you just deconstructed that whole thing.
There you go.
Boom. Okay, I don't think it gets any better than this. We better wrap this up. So, The Measure of a Man and Author are not the only thing that we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because we're basically pitching a story arc.
Right.
Like we're Babylon 5, and we've got this five-year arc.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a three-year plus maybe the cartoons plus the movies arc.
Earl Grey.
Billy has 25 self-stealing symbols that he needs to trade with a non-Federation species using a different currency. What does Billy do?
The Orb.
They've already been kind of to that next step. I mean, he massages her all the time and helps her out of the tub again.
He knows that she has rashes on her thighs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so...
To the journey! You know, talk about a heavy-handed message.
Like, literally, on your back.
Like, literally, on your back. Like, I want you to feel the weight. You know, like, this this is the kind of non-subtlety that makes it fun. Warp 5.
The fact of the matter is, Bakula is playing this character just as he should. It's true that Archer seems a bit uneasy, lacking in confidence. But he's the first human captain to see these strange new worlds.
The Ready Room.
I haven't gotten to the point in my research where I'm that caught up. I mean, I'm very much stuck right in season one of Next Gen and kind of have
That's
blinders
kind of
on everything else right now. Yeah, boy, tell me about it.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And we have kind of reached a milestone here, a little earlier than you might think we would have reached that milestone. This is the final episode of Star Trek for which we have a writing credit given to Gene Roddenberry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And he wanted it, the first part to be called Becoming Houdini, and the second part to be called Being Houdini.
Should have been called Houdini Begins.
Yes.
And Houdini Rises.
Yes.
Melodic Treks.
At only 22 years of age, he conducted the Munich Symphony Orchestra using 110 pieces, a 60-piece choir and a 30-piece children's choir. Sometimes you need the children to get them high notes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows, all 20 gazillion of them now. I think, I mean, the podcast network just keeps growing and growing. It's insane. And thank goodness we have the help of sponsors because they really help us get this content out. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. you'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
And you know who else helps us? Listeners like you.
That's right.
To pull from PBS, because at Patreon, we have an account where, if you don't know about this yet, this is kind of a cool thing. It's not quite a Kickstarter. It's where you can choose a level of contribution, whether it's $1 or $500 million. If you're really rich, I mean, we'd love to have you sponsor us. You can go there, and there's various levels of contribution, and with each level, you get certain perks. And the more you contribute, obviously, on a monthly basis, the higher your perks are. So go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to see what those are. And if you haven't become a donor, a monthly donor to us yet, we would love it if you would consider that, because this does help us out tremendously, and there is cool stuff in it for you.
And also, another way that you can help us out is by giving us an iTunes review or a Stitcher review or a review on whatever format that you listen to us on.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of which, we do have an iTunes review that we need to acknowledge, because we got a little Twitter at reply from Carl12X he let us know that he left a 5-star rating and a review in the UK iTunes store. So I really thank him for doing that, because we don't always go through the non-US iTunes stores, just because there's so many and you have to go through each one manually. There's no easy way to do it. So that saves us tons of time. So thank you very much, Carl, for not only writing us a review and singing our praises and helping us in the iTunes rankings, but also for letting us know if you are not in the U.S. and you do the same thing. We'd really appreciate it if you would do the same. Now, next week, we have another fantastic show lined up for everybody. What are we doing, Tristan?
What we're doing, Char, is an in-depth character analysis. And whoa. I'm sure what you guys are saying right now is, you know, Tristan and Char, you've already done a character analysis of every single person on Star
Who's
Trek Voyager.
Left?
Who's left? Well, what we're doing may surprise you. We're doing an in-depth character analysis of the Borg Queen.
Yes. Now, of course, we have talked a little bit about the Borg as a species, as an entity in the past when we did our series on aliens in Voyager, but we're going to focus specifically on the Borg Queen herself. A lot of thoughts on that, because we did see her in quite a bit of Voyager, but you're going to have to wait until next week. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!